Britain's new ambassador to the Vatican on Friday presented his credentials to Pope Benedict, stressing his government's commitment to ever closer cooperation between the UK and the Holy See. In his address to the Pope, Ambassador Nigel Baker highlighted areas of shared common values, in particular efforts to combat climate change, the elaboration of a new international arms trade treaty, and the achievement of the Millennium Development Goals. He noted that the ideals of tolerance, generosity, and respect for others must be applied in reality to build a new culture of social responsibility, both at home and abroad. In his address to the new ambassador, Pope Benedict recalled his four-day visit to the UK last September and stressed the importance of fostering enduring values that, he said, cannot be simply expressed in legal terms. When policies do not presume or promote objective values, he said, the resulting moral relativism, instead of leading to a society that is free and fair, just and compassionate, tends instead to produce frustration, despair, selfishness, and a disregard for the life and liberty of others. He assured the new ambassador the Catholic Church is eager to continue offering her substantial contribution to the common good in the light of the Christian vision of the rights and dignity of the human person. The Pope also noted the British government's commitment to international aid and development, welcoming Prime Minister David Cameron's pledge to maintain the country's aid budget, and inviting Ambassador Baker to explore ways of furthering development cooperation between the UK and the Church's charitable organisations and agencies. So how does the new ambassador respond to Pope Benedict's words? What does he see as the most urgent challenges in his new job? Following the papal audience, Ambassador Baker came to our studios to share with me his vision for increased cooperation between Britain and the Holy See. Ambassador Nigel Baker, thank you for coming into the studio today and happy birthday, first of all.
Thank you very much indeed.
The day you presented your credentials is also your birthday. So
I don't think one can celebrate the birthday in a better way than presenting credentials to His Holiness the Pope.
You met with him up in Castel Gandolfo. The Pope, of course, unsurprisingly, began by recalling his visit to the United Kingdom this time last year, didn't he? Now, if I'm correct in thinking, you were actually in Bolivia as the ambassador there at the time, weren't
That's
you?
Right. That's right. No, I was in Bolivia at the time, but in fact, I mean, one of the extraordinary things about the visit, which was an amazingly successful visit, was also the coverage and the impact worldwide. I mean, there I was several thousand miles away in La Paz, but the Bolivian newspapers were covering the visit every day, Bolivian television. So even in distant Bolivia, there was a close day-by-day coverage of that extraordinary visit.
Looking back 1 year on, if you could try and somehow describe the lasting legacy of that visit, particularly within government circles, what would that be?
I think, I mean, there were various sort of key messages that came out of the visit. I mean, I think one of the most important areas where concrete work has been continuing since then is the close relationship between the United Kingdom and the Holy See and the global Catholic network in development work. It's no coincidence that Secretary of State for International Development Andrew Mitchell was here only a few months ago, and the sort of commitment to integral and sustainable development, which is something very much at the heart of the philosophy of the Holy See in the developing world, is also a key aspect of our own international development. And, you know, I think things like the Global Alliance on Vaccination and Immunisation, the fact that the Apostolic Nuncio in London, with obviously the full blessing of the Holy See, was able to be at the launch in June in London with Prime Minister David Cameron, offering a symbolic donation and supporting the work that United Kingdom is doing with Bill Gates in immunisation of millions of young Africans. It's a good example of the sort of tangible legacy of the visit. I think more broadly, I mean, there are a whole range of areas, but I think more broadly, the message of the Pope, which was reflected also by David Cameron in his farewell speech about the importance in society of developing a culture of social responsibility, of finding ways to build cohesion in society, underpinning that through values, compassion, tolerance, using education, using social policies. This underpins our foreign affairs, our foreign policy, but I think also it continues to be crucial in the way that the British government looks at British society. Some of the comments of Prime Minister Cameron following the events in the summer in the United Kingdom, for example, about the importance of improving education, distribution of wealth, family values. These flow very much from the messages of the Pope when he was in the United Kingdom.
And certainly this question of values, enduring values, was at the heart of the Pope's speech to you. He talked about values that cannot simply be expressed in legal terms. Some would say that the UK has become a rather legalistic society where the law takes precedent, perhaps, over common sense or these compassionate attitudes that you're talking about.
Clearly we are a society that respects the law, and being able to enshrine key rights in law is an important aspect for us both domestically and internationally in taking society forward. But I would avoid any sense that that's the sort of exclusive nature of our work on values. Again, Prime Minister Cameron talks all the time about the importance of family and the importance of civil society. And when he does that, what he's saying is, you know, the government can't legislate for every problem in our society. It's not for government to run the way we live. The government can facilitate through legislation, but actually you need that cohesion coming up from below, from family, through education, from civil society, voluntary groups, faith groups, charity work, none of which is legalistic in any way whatsoever. And I think that is a crucial aspect of the current government social policy, and I think also in our foreign policies as well. The Pope this morning talked to me a little bit about Cardinal Newman and how, you know, the beatification of Cardinal Newman was a crucial aspect of the visit. Cardinal Newman, his works and writings, which His Holiness has clearly studied in great depth. And one of the key aspects of that is the via media, the middle way, something that Cardinal Newman was focusing on very much, middle way between extremes. His Holiness had talked about the dialogue between reason and faith. And again, that isn't something that you can legislate for. That's a path that you have to find through society, through development of values. And I think that's very much what David Cameron has been getting at in talking about big society and talking about the way that the government can facilitate but not decide the way society goes forward.
You're talking about social cohesion, and in his speech, the Pope talked about what he described as events in England this summer, clearly talking about the rioting, when it would seem that these values, this social cohesion, broke down completely in certain areas of London and other big cities. The Pope suggests that perhaps it was a lack of these moral values which was behind this. What do you see as the reasons behind those riots?
Clearly there's going to be a period of analysis, a period of reflection. And I think it would be dangerous to launch into sort of, you know, this was the problem. I mean, a lot of commentators have been very ready to do so, but I think it requires a certain amount of study and analysis. I think two things worth saying. One is the juxtaposition of a couple of weeks later, World Youth Day in Madrid, where you had, you know, 1.5 million or more young people coming together in faith, very positive, including a large contingent of young British people, representing and demonstrating a very different aspect of, you know, young people's culture from what we saw a couple of weeks or so previously in a number of British cities. So I think it's very important not to talk about lost generations or sweepingly talk about young people in negative terms, because there are young people following many different paths, including very positive paths.
But perhaps we can talk about a divided society, as you say, between those who were taking part in the rioting and those, as you say, who live a very different life and were in fact very disturbed by the rioting.
I think one has to understand why, for some people, why they were out there on the streets, why they were taking this opportunity, in many cases very opportunistic, to loot or to rob. It is clear that one of the problems is our own penal system. I mean, some people have said, the response is to lock up the malefactors. Well, interestingly, one thing that we've discovered is that certainly of those over 18, nearly three quarters of those arrested had already been in prison at some point. So something isn't working in the penal system. If you know what is prison for? If it's not also, it's not just to punish. You have to find ways to ensure that when young people who have been in prison come out of prison, they can enter into society and play a positive role. This is clearly not happening. If 75% of those arrested had been in prison before, there is clearly also a case, and this is something which the Pope has touched on, about a lack of values. Now, it may be, you know, people are valueless. Perhaps it may be family problems. It may be problems from their education. It may be they are hopeless in the sense of lacking in hope because they haven't got a job. But I think it's very complex. I think the question of values, however, and adherence to society in a positive way is clearly one of the key elements in the difficulties that we faced in the summer, and something that I think when politicians, when social groups, when those who are looking to rebuild civil society are looking closely at these areas, one of the broader areas that they're going to be focusing on, without doubt.
And yet David Cameron talked about a fight back, didn't he, about tougher police tactics, harsher punishments. Doesn't this suggest that he sees it more in terms of security rather than values, the construction of values that we're talking about?
Well, he's also talking about society and education and social cohesion. I think one has to accept that as the causes are very complex, the response has to be quite complex. There's no single answer to the difficulties. And I suspect we will find that when that careful analysis takes place, hopefully, I think, community by community, because we won't necessarily find the same causes in London as there were in Birmingham, for example, that real causes will be identified. If we're talking about alienation in one place, if we're talking about social conflict in another place, talking about education problems in another, I think we will find that there is that complexity of the solution. Policing may well be one aspect of it. There'll be some for whom, you know, for whom a tougher policing or a more proactive policing may be the answer in some areas. Others, the answer will be different. I think it's that complex nature which David Cameron has been trying to reflect in, you know, his different responses and speeches over the last weeks.
How much do you think the churches in the UK and other faith communities too can be a part of the solution to these problems?
No, I think they have a hugely important role, without doubt. As I said, you know, one of the legacies of the visit of the Pope to the United Kingdom was where we were looking at international development and how faith can play a role along with governments in a very practical way in providing development solutions in many parts of the world. Well, I think we can also look at our own society in the United Kingdom and say, well, that can be the same as well, you know, within the United Kingdom. I think it was not a coincidence that where priests, be they Catholic, Roman Catholic priests, be they Anglican priests, church ministers, in many communities that were suffering these problems in early on in the summer, played a huge role both in stopping it, in talking to youngsters, in bringing them back from the brink, maybe convincing them not to engage, in joining the behaviour of others, some of their peers, but also are right in the front line of the rebuilding of communities afterwards. When I had the opportunity before coming out here to talk to Archbishop Nichols, the Archbishop of Westminster, you know, about the role of Bishops' Conference and the Catholic Church in communities, and also with the Archbishop of Canterbury on the same subject, and the message was the same. You know, the churches are there in the communities. You know, they have this extraordinary parish network, and the good priests are the ones who are really down there talking to people. They know their communities. They know the families that have difficulties. They know where people can come together. They often have facilities where they can support. And perhaps there is a greater role that they should be playing, also reminding government that they are there, sometimes when government isn't there, in talking to people in a trusting way. So I think there's a huge role. It's in education, in that work of social cohesion we've talked about, of the Catholic Church, the Anglican Church, and the other churches in the United Kingdom. Really a huge role that they can play, and I think a vital role.
The Pope said, in fact, to you that the Catholic Church will contribute very much in any way possible, in accordance with her own principles and Christian vision. Now, as you know, there are occasions when Catholics see themselves as discriminated against by government, particularly where the government is keen to support other minorities, for example, the gay community. How do you see perhaps a resolution of some of these conflicts which don't help in building these values and the kind of society that Cameron is talking about?
I think, first of all, I mean, I enormously welcome essentially what was an offer from the Pope, the wonderful vision and the facilities and the people of the Catholic Church in the United Kingdom to help with the construction of the big society, of this development of social cohesion. But yes, I mean, there are some areas where there are different points of view. I think there we must almost always accept that in societies, in complex, multicultural, multi-religious, democratic societies, there is never going to be a single viewpoint or one single value system or one single structure of the way we do things. And I think that's accepting that is also very much something that David Cameron's been talking about and the Holy Father's been talking about: tolerance, compassion, recognition of difference. You know, we're never going to fit into a single straitjacket, but I think that ability of different groups and of government to understand each other, of government to understand that there are different ways of doing things. You know, to go forward as a society, we have to work together, accepting difference and finding ways of working with those different views. So, you know, be it the relationship between different faiths, be it the relationship between different identities that make up the sort of complex patchwork that is the United Kingdom, the only way to go forward is by respecting the difference, understanding the difference, and finding ways where there are clashes of resolving those in open dialogue and in debate.
You talked also about education as one of these keys to rebuilding values, also empowering local community, job creation and so on. But in the current economic climate, how much is the government really prepared to spend on these, as we say, crucial areas?
I mean, clearly there is pressure on the British government budget, as there is pressure on all budgets because of the global economic crisis. But this is a priority. The government's setting education as one of its clear priorities. I think there are ways, of course, one can always find more efficient ways of spending money. And I think the government is looking not so much at the inputs as what we're getting out of education. What are we producing? You know, are we producing citizens who will contribute to society for the future? Is there a way of doing it through different type of school? There's an interesting experiment at the moment through, as it were, the creation of what they're calling sort of free independent schools, academies, with very high educational values, but ways in which generating support, not just top-down, government funds, government money, you know, the budget always has to go up, but also from society, from business, how to explore and apply the interests of business in looking ahead to the future, in improving their environment by investing and contributing to young people. So I think one of the ways the government is looking to maximise the opportunities is bring in other contributors and not always just rely on the taxpayer to help finding solutions. Of course, the budgets are under threat. We've seen in university education, you know, the government has said that families, that parents, yes, and individual students will have to be prepared to accept that they will have to invest more themselves in this all-important education. It can't just simply come from the government, you know, representing all the interests of all taxpayers, including those who haven't been to university, for example. But I think there are ways of doing that, and there are ways of finding those resources that you need from other parts of society that perhaps haven't contributed sufficiently in the past, such as business and other groups within society. It's an interesting experiment, and we'll see how it develops over the next couple of years. But education, I think, remains very much a priority of the government.
Going back just for a moment to the international stage, you were talking about the very fruitful areas where the church and the British government work closely together, particularly in development, healthcare and so on that you mentioned. The government is committed, isn't it, to achieving this 0.7% target for development aid. We're sure that that will stay despite the pressures, as you say, on the budget.
No, I'm absolutely certain it will stay. I mean, the Prime Minister has confirmed this more than once over this year. There are, of course, voices, you know, from stage left, or stage right, saying, you know, at this time of economic crisis, well, we should look to our own. Why have we got this commitment? Well, you know, we understand it as part of what I was saying earlier, you know, the projection of our own values overseas. It's a firm commitment. We're not going to go back on that commitment. And we also see that it helps us. Having a more stable world, which requires our engagement, our development support in parts of Africa, in parts of Asia, where this support still is crucially needed, helps us in the long run, because we are creating an environment for stability for our exports, for our business. We're heading off potential conflict in the world where, you know, we would find ourselves having to be engaged, protecting British citizens or whatever. So I think we see it as something that is our responsibility as a country that believes in its values and believes that these are values that we want to share in the world. But it's also something that is in our own benefit as well. And the Prime Minister has been very clear about that the 0.7% by 2013 is a target which we intend to meet.
You mentioned particularly two areas where you think are the most significant areas of cooperation. You talked about climate change and the international arms trade.
Yes.
Can you tell us anything at all about plans or projects in this area in the coming months or years?
In climate change and the environment, I mean, we have, of course, this continual process of international negotiation under the auspices of the UNFCCC, the global climate change negotiations, which involve, you know, all countries in the world, 193, I think. Incredibly complex, but incredibly important, and something which the United Kingdom is playing a leading role, both within Europe, encouraging and stimulating, you know, our European partners to look beyond the immediate economic crisis at what we see as, you know, an existential crisis, which is the relationship, you know, what we're doing to the planet and how we need to respond now to head off problems in the future, and to set an example, to set a lead. The United Kingdom has legislated, it is a firm commitment in law, to reduce our carbon emissions by 80% by 2050, which effectively means reducing them entirely. So that's setting an example, and that's leading by example. But we're also really engaging with other countries, where I was before in Latin America, in Africa, in Asia, to work to build a sort of common vision of the way forward. We can always disagree on the detail, but what we're looking for from the next meeting in Durban, from the Rio 2012, 20 years on summit, is this sort of recognition that we need to be ambitious for a low carbon future, for our children and grandchildren, and ambitious for the future of humanity on the planet, which means respecting and finding different ways of doing things. The Holy Father spoke in his speech to me of harnessing new technologies, new models, you know, new advances in the service of environment and the planet. And I think there's an awful lot going on in the United Kingdom, developing new techniques of energy, wind energy, finding new ways of low carbon development, which we're trying to share and working for in that case, in this particular case, for Durban 2011. And I hope very much that the Holy See will be able to speak out, you know, because its moral force, its moral suasive power is very important in this, as we've seen in the impact of Caritas in Veritate, for example, and other messages of the Pope. On disarmament, 2012 is going to be a crucial year. We have in small arms, you know, the hopefully really very positive developments towards what we're all looking for, which is a final agreement on a global arms trade treaty. Small arms kill more people, many, many more people in the world than, you know, the grand weapons of mass destruction, important though it is that we have to focus on those as well. And, you know, commitments of particularly of engaging the global, the major arms exporters, which include the United Kingdom, to ensure that, you know, quite legitimate defence exports, but cannot be used for the furtherance of destruction, the killing of innocent people, instability in the world. I think it's really important. We're making huge progress. We have worked very, very closely with the Holy See. The Holy See, the representatives in United Nations in Geneva, for example, we're making real progress, and we're, you know, we're positive that we can see something solid in 2012. It's also going to be a big year for nuclear arms disarmament talks as well. You know, we shall see. I think that's going to be more complicated. There are complicated issues involving, you know, new nuclear arms powers, as well as the ways forward in equilibrium in disarmament of the major nuclear powers. But again, I think the will is there. Sometimes we have to fight through the thicket of precedent and always that sense of, well, you jump first and then I'll follow. But again, I think there is cautious optimism. I'd emphasise the word, the cautious, but cautious optimism that we can see progress there. And again, I think the role of the Holy See and the International Catholic Church in helping to persuade governments that this needs to be a priority, and this is a way forward, this is the only way forward for humanity, it can be extraordinarily powerful. So, you know, we're looking forward to carry on that work and hearing more and more loudly the voice of the Holy See on these issues.
And presumably we'll be hearing from you on these issues on your blog, because you are the first British ambassador, aren't you, to have started up a blog about the work that you're doing in forwarding and furthering these issues.
Yes, absolutely. No, it's something I did in La Paz, where I was in La Paz. And I think quite often, you know, even the last 2 or 3 months before I'd taken up my post, I've heard the question, you know, what does an ambassador to the Holy See actually do? Sometimes, you know, questions, well, you know, why do we have an embassy to the Holy See? Well, you know, I think there are an awful lot of good reasons why we have an embassy to the Holy See. We have, you know, it's a global vision. We engage with the Holy See on a whole range of global issues. But I think it's through the blog, I hope, will be one way in which I can help to explain that, so that those who ask the question, well, I'll be able to say, well, look at the blog and find out, and encourage people to you know, visit our website, and we'll do our best to explain to, particularly to British taxpayers, but also, you know, to the wider world, why the United Kingdom engages with the Holy See and why we have an embassy doing the work it's doing.
Ambassador Nigel Baker, thank you very much for being with us today.
No, great pleasure. Thanks very much indeed.
My thanks there to Ambassador Nigel Baker, the new British ambassador to the Holy See, who presented his credentials to Pope Benedict at Castel Gandolfo on Friday.